Good morning, everybody. As Stefan said, my name is Roberto Perdigi, and I'm going to present a work titled Behavioral Clustering of HTTP-based Malware and Signature Generation Using Malicious Network Traces. This is a joint work with my advisor, Professor Renke Lee, and Professor Nick Fimster of Georgia Tech. And this work was possible because of collaboration between Georgia Tech and Dambala, which is a network security company based in Atlanta. So as probably most of you know, the majority of cybercrimes are carried out using malicious software. And for example, attackers use malware-compromised machines to send spam or perform identity theft or denial-of-service attacks and so on. Today, there are many different types of malware, such as Trojans, bots, spyware, adversary, scareware, and so on. And these different types of malware are programmed to accomplish different malicious tasks, but they all have one thing in common, which is to provide the cyber criminals with a way to make money illegally. Traditionally, we have relied on antiviruses to protect our computers from malware. But unfortunately, in time, malware authors have developed techniques that allow them to automatically generate potentially thousands of variants of a given malware sample. And these variants will be hard to detect for antiviruses. Basically, they take a malware, a file, an executable file usually, that contains malware code, and they pack it. And the result of this is another file that hides the malicious code. But when you run it, it will run the malicious code. So this is a huge problem. And the question is, what can we do to improve our detection of malware-infected machines? Well, our work starts from two key observations. The first observation is the fact that most malware need a network connection, network communications, to perpetrate malicious activities. For example, bots need to contact what's called a command and control server and basically join a botnet, a network, a group of compromised machines that are under control usually of the same attacker. And the bots belonging to this botnet will wait for commands from the attacker. The attacker may ask the bots to start sending spam or perform denial of service attacks and so on. Spyware, another type of malware, need to exfiltrate private information such as credit card numbers or social security numbers and so on and send them over to the attacker. And many other different types of malware need network communication to really do bad things. The second observation is the fact that while malware authors can easily generate large numbers of malware variants that can evade antivirus detection, if we take these variants and we run them, they will behave in a similar way. And the reason is that they basically originate from the same malicious code base, and therefore they share the same malicious goals, and that's why they will behave in a similar way when executed. So our approach is, instead of looking at files on disk like antiviruses do, we want to look at network traffic. And what we want to do specifically is to look at the traffic at the edge of a network and be able to distinguish between legitimate traffic and malware-generated traffic. And the reason why we want to do that is because then we can pinpoint what machines have been likely compromised by malware, inform the network administrator who can take actions to remediate them. And one of our goals is basically to complement existing host-based detection systems such as the antiviruses themselves. We don't want to throw them away. They're useful in a way, but they don't cover all the cases. So basically, we want to detect those malware infections that slip through existing defenses and improve the coverage in terms of how many malware infections we can really detect within the monitor network. Our work focuses on web-based malware. What I mean with this is that we focus on malware that use the HTTP protocol as the main means to either communicate with the attacker or to perpetrate malicious activities. And the reason why we focus on web-based malware is the fact that there has been a recent growth in the number of this type of malware. For example, the graph on the right shows the growth in the number of botnets that use the HTTP protocol for command and control purposes. Perhaps the main reason why malware developers are switching to HTTP is the fact that by simply using the HTTP protocol, they can bypass existing perimeter defenses such as egress filtering performed by firewalls. Also, there is another reason, which is the fact that there are a number of WebKits, web server applications for malware command and control that are available in the underground internet and can be downloaded either for a fee or for free. So the scenario we consider in our work is as follows. We assume that we can monitor the traffic at the edge of an enterprise network, which usually deploys already, for a firewall. And usually the only traffic that is really allowed to go out is the HTTP traffic. And the reason is that people need to browse the internet to do their job. But at the same time, as I said, this gives the malware an opportunity to use the HTTP protocol to go out and talk to the attacker or perform malicious activities. So what we want to do is to be able to detect this malware-related HTTP traffic so that we can stop the traffic and also inform the network administrator about what machines are compromised. And the approach we take is as follows. We basically start from a collection of malware. We collect malware from the internet every day, basically, and as many as we can. And actually, this task is relatively easy, unfortunately, for us. And what we do is, after we collect these thousands of malware samples, we perform behavioral analysis, meaning we look at how malware behaves. And what we want to do is to automatically learn from their behavior and generate malware detection models that we can then deploy in, let's say, an intrusion detection system, and therefore enable the detection of malware-generated traffic. So, as I said, we start from a collection of malware, a large collection of malware, and what we do is we perform behavioral clustering. Basically, what we are looking for is to find groups of or families of malware variants, malware samples, that behave in a similar way. Why do we need these malware families? Well, the reason is that once we find these malware families, we can look at the traffic, the HTTP traffic generated by each variant belonging to the same family, and then we can try to summarize the traffic that these variants generate with a set of, let's say, regular expressions that we can consider as malware detection signatures. And we can use these signatures then to match the traffic generated by all the variants in the same family in real time at the edge of the network. Behavioral malware clustering has been studied before, and there are a number of related works which I reported here in the slide. But the difference is that with our work is the fact that these previous works focus on the host-level behavior of malware, meaning they look at how malware behaves in terms of what system call they perform or what registry they modify in the when they attack the Windows operating system, when they install themselves, or what files they write on disk and so on. What we noticed in our work is that there are some malware that while they generate the very same network traffic, they perform very different system-level activities, host-level activities. So the risk here is that if we apply host-level behavioral clustering, we will split those malware variants that actually generate similar malware traffic, network traffic. So instead, we propose to focus on the network-level behavior of malware in order to perform malware clustering. And the reason is that ultimately what we want is to generate network detection signatures. And therefore, we need to find as accurate as possible malware families, that is, groups of malware that behave similarly at the network level. And indeed, in the paper, we showed that by using this approach, we can eventually generate better malware detection signatures compared to using the results of host-level behavioral malware clustering approaches. And I hope this will be also clearer later when I present the results. Now we'll try to walk you through the network-level behavioral clustering system that we proposed. We proposed to use the three-step clustering refinement process. And the reason why we split the clustering process in three steps is because we found that performing clustering in one step is actually pretty hard, not just in these domains, but in many other domains. And using this three-step clustering refinement process, we were able to find a good trade-off between efficiency and accuracy. When I talk about efficiency, I mean speed. And accuracy, I mean quality of the malware clusters that we find. The first thing that we need to do is collect malware traces. We take the set of malware that we collected previously, and we run each malware sample in a controlled environment. And we collect the HTTP traffic that each malware sample generates. So each malware trace represents all the HTTP traffic that a malware sample generated during execution. Now, once we have these malware traces, what we want to do is to find groups of malware traces that are similar to each other. And the way we do it is with the first step of coarse grain clustering. Basically, here what we do is we take each malware trace and we measure from each malware trace a number of statistical features, such as how many GET requests were in the trace, how many POST requests, the average length of the URLs, and so on. And the reason why we do this is because at this point it's easy to measure the distance between malware traces by simply measuring the difference between statistical features. And by measuring, being able to measure the distance between malware traces gives us the opportunity to apply known clustering algorithms, such as, for example, hierarchical clustering. And therefore, we can group malware traces in clusters of traces that are similar to each other. This is, as I said, a coarse-grained clustering step. And the reason why we called it coarse is because this step is based on these high-level statistical features that describe the malware traces. Now, what we want to do is to refine this result. And basically, instead of looking at high-level statistical features, now we want to look at structural features of the malware traces. So we take each single malware cluster, coarse-grained cluster, and we want to see whether we need to split it in more fine-grained clusters. And to do so, we, as I said, look at the malware traces, all the malware traces in the cluster. And then, although I will not be able to go into the details here, in the paper we defined a measure of distance between malware traces that takes into account how the single HTTP request in the trace look like. Basically, we first define a measure of distance between pairs of HTTP requests from two malware traces. And then we generalize this distance to sets of HTTP requests. Now, defining this, once we have defined this distance between malware traces, again, this gives us the opportunity to apply hierarchical clustering and potentially split a coarse grain cluster into finer grain clusters. Now, the third step. While we obtain these fine-grained clusters, why should we do anything else? I mean, in theory, we should be done. But actually, what we noticed is that, as I said before, clustering is very challenging because it can be seen as an unsupervised learning process. And getting it right the first time is very hard. So what we do in this third step is basically we review the results we have obtained so far and try to see whether there are groups of clusters that we split, but that are actually close enough to each other and we should merge them back together. And this step, we call it meta-clustering. We call it meta-clustering because we are clustering clusters, basically. Now, as I was trying to say, this meta-clustering step tries to recover from possible mistakes made in previous steps, and in particular in the coarse-grain clustering step. And in the paper and in the results that I'm about to show you, it will be evident that this step actually improves the overall quality of the malware clusters, and therefore, in turn, it will improve the quality of the malware detection models that we extract from the malware clusters, the malware families that we found. Here is a very high-level overview of how we do the meta-clustering step. Basically, the input is a set of fine-grained clusters. For each cluster, we compute what we call the cluster centroid. A cluster centroid is basically a summary of all the traffic in the malware traces in a certain cluster. For example, here we have this gray cluster that contains three malware traces, and the red dot is the centroid. How do we compute the centroid? Well, basically, we look at the these three malware traces, and we apply an algorithm that is called token subsequences algorithm, which is a known algorithm proposed previously. And basically, we extract a set of regular expressions that can match all the traffic in the original malware traces. Now, once we have obtained this class of centroids, we define a distance, a measure of distance between centroids. And again, I will not be able to go into the details here. I hope you will be interested enough to look at the paper or ask me in person. But basically, here we define a measure of distance between centroids by leveraging an algorithm for approximate matching of regular expressions. Now, again, measuring the distances between objects, in this case, cluster centroids and the four clusters, allows us to apply hierarchical clustering and to group together fine-grained clusters that are very close to each other and they should be merged. So this is the last step. What we get is a set of malware families. That is, again, groups of malware that behave in a similar way at a network level. Now, the next step is, from each malware family, we want to extract a number of detection signatures. And again, we leverage the token subsequences algorithm, which was proposed in a paper called Polygraph in 2005. And we actually don't use it directly. Rather, we tweak the algorithm to basically solve our own problem. And from each malware family, we extract, using this algorithm, we extract a set of, again, regular expressions that can be seen as network signatures and can be used, can be deployed in a, for example, using a device such as an intrusion detection system to match malware-generated HTTP traffic at the edge of a network. We performed a fairly thorough evaluation of our system. We collected about 25,000 distinct real-world malware samples in a period of six months, from February to July 2009. In this talk, I will only present the results regarding the malware we collected in February for the sake of time. But in the paper, of course, we have the results for all the experiments performed during all the 6 months of malware collection that we had available. So from this table, what you can see is that in February, we collected 4,758 samples total. And by applying our network-level behavioral clustering system, we were able to find 234 malware families that contained two or more malware samples in them. We discarded the singleton clusters because from the singleton clusters, meaning the clusters that contain only one malware sample, it's not possible to generalize from the malware traffic and generate detection models. So we discarded those. And the remaining samples were 3,494 grouped in these 234 malware families. And from these 234 malware families, we were able to extract 446 malware detection signatures. And the total processing time was about 8 hours. Now, another thing we wanted to do was to evaluate how good our clusters are. This is actually a very hard question to answer in general, not just in this domain. Usually, when you do unsupervised learning clustering, it's very hard to evaluate how good your clusters are at the end. And people have proposed to use cluster validity analysis processes, but these processes are kind of subjective in terms of they're specific for specific domains. So what we did is, although I will not be able to go into the details of this, in the paper we proposed a way to compare the results of our clustering system, meaning our malware families that we found, we compare them to the malware family names attributed by multiple commercial antiviruses to our malware samples. And we compare the results. And what we showed in the paper is that by doing this comparison, we can verify that our malware clustering system is generating compact and fairly well-separated clusters, which is the ideal objective of most clustering processes. Now, we also wanted to analyze how good our malware detection signatures are. So again, what we did was to take our malware clusters and extract the signatures from each malware family. And then what we do is we use an intrusion detection engine to try to match these signatures against the malware traffic generated by a separate set of malware. And the results are reported in these two tables. I will talk about the first table first. So basically here, what we have is that we took the malware samples we collected in February 2009, we applied the clustering process, and we extracted the signatures. And then we took these signatures and we tried to match these signatures against the malware traffic, the traffic generated by malware samples that we collected in February, March, and then April, and so on and so forth. And what we can see here is that we were able to correctly model 85.9% of the malware collected in February. But also, and perhaps even more importantly, using the signatures we extracted in February, we are actually able, once deployed, to detect malware in the future, malware that we didn't collect until March. And in particular, we can detect about 50% of them. And even 2 months later, we are able to, still using the signatures we extracted in February, we are able to detect about 47.8% of the malware samples that we collected in April. And here, one thing that is worth noting is that the detection rate decreases in time. This actually was an expected result, because the malware evolve in time, and their behavior evolves in time, and therefore our signatures in time will become outdated. But what we showed in the paper is actually that since our clustering and signature generation system is efficient enough, we can periodically update our signatures, and basically using newly collected malware, fresh malware, we can regenerate signatures and deploy the updated signatures, and therefore keep the detection rate for current and future malware as high as possible, potentially at this level or even better. The second table shows similar results. But here what we are focusing on is we are trying to test our signatures against those malware samples that were not detected by commercial antiviruses. So basically, we take our signatures generated in February and we try to match the traffic that was generated by malware collected in February, but only limiting ourselves to the malware that was basically slipped through the antiviruses. And as we can see, we could detect more than 50% of these types of malware, both in February, but also in the future month in March. And again, the detection rate goes down, but if we keep our signatures updated by regenerating them using newly collected malware, then we're still good. And another thing is, what about the false positives? And what we did is, to test for false positives, we used a large data set of legitimate HTTP queries collected in at the edge of a network that was hosting about 2,000 active nodes per day. And we found that these signatures actually generated no false alerts. And we repeated all these experiments for all the other months. And in some cases, we had false positives, but very, very few per day. The last thing we wanted to do is to compare our approach to other approaches. So what we did is, the questions we wanted to answer is, what happens if we only use one step of clustering rather than our three-step refinement process? And what happens if, in order to find the malware families, we use a host-based behavioral clustering approach? So in order to perform this evaluation, we proceeded as follows. We took the malware samples collected in February, we used the very same malware set, and we applied the three different clustering approaches. Our three-steps clustering approach, a one-step clustering approach that uses only the fine-grained clustering step. And then also we used, thanks to the collaboration with the authors of a paper that was presented in 2009 in NDSS, we were able to use this a known host-based behavioral clustering process to generate, to find malware families. Now, from the sets of malware families we found using these three different approaches, in all cases, we extracted the signatures, and then we tested the signatures against separate malware sets. In this case, I only reported the results for malware collected in February and March. And what we can see is that the detection rate of the signatures extracted from malware families that we computed, we found using our three steps refinement, clustering refinement process, basically outperform all the other approaches. And finally, in conclusion, we proposed a novel behavioral malware clustering system, which is based on looking at the natural behavior of malware to find malware families, meaning groups of malware that behave in a similar way. And we did this with a good trade-off between efficiency and accuracy. And we showed that the results, our results, are better in terms of how good our detection models are compared to extracting the detection model from results obtained using previous work regarding host-level behavioral clustering. And also we showed that the malware signatures that we were able to extract can complement existing host-level malware detection approaches such as antiviruses, because we can detect things that slip through the antiviruses. And before concluding, I'd like to say that one of the best rewards was to gain appreciation from the people who use the results of our research on a daily basis. And with this, I'd like to take some questions.
Have you considered to use your approach to non-HTTP traffic, like the malware may use some other protocols?
Yes, this is actually part of our future work. We are considering to generalize this approach to all types of traffic, not only HTTP. And basically, I guess we focused on HTTP because this was very important for the model in particular. Because as I said, in enterprise networks, usually the other traffic is usually already blocked, so we are not that concerned about it. Nonetheless, we want to know about machines that are compromised with malware that uses other protocols. And yes, we have a plan to extend this.
So knowing how your detection and clustering work, a malware author might want to start creating URLs that basically go random, go crazy, or do something that tries to obfuscate and make it less clusterable. Have you put any thought on that?
Yes, that's a good question. So it's usual in security, right? It's a game. A few observations about it. If you use, let's say, HTTP query that look random, let's say the URLs are obfuscated in a way, then in that case, I think it's possible to use, for example, anomaly detection systems to kind of like complement our approach and use them both to still catch those cases. However, in the paper we talked about a very sophisticated attack, which we called noise injection attacks, on which I actually worked previously. And in this case, it's actually really hard. What we can do if the malware author tries to inject noise, like send HTTP requests that have nothing to do with its behavior, just to disrupt our clustering process, for example. Well, in this case, since we run the malware in a controlled environment, we can look at their system-level behavior as well and try to combine the two and try to find whether the malware is trying to use, let's say, sources of randomness to select what queries to send, for example, or something like that. But to be honest, I mean, noise injection attacks are very hard for everybody. As a matter of fact, in the paper, we discussed the fact that these attacks are also possible against host-based behavioral clustering system. So it's hard. Our hope is that it's not as easy for the malware authors to develop these kind of sophisticated attacks. And it took quite a while for them to develop techniques to evade antiviruses. We hope that it will take quite a long time for them to do the same with us.
Yilin Shi from MSR SVC.
Hi.
So you did like a two-step approach. One is clustering, one is signature extraction. So
yes.
I'm wondering like sort of how the signature generation depends on the clustering. So how
yes.
critical is this clustering for generating meaningful
right.
signatures? You look at this sort of compare with meta cluster with fine grain. But what I'm wondering like if without the previous step, you
mm-hmm.
throw all the traffic text, for example, the HTTP request there, and you just run the subsequent analysis, what
right.
would the result be?
Right. So I think I guess I had one slide here. So we actually did a lot of comparisons with just, you know, using other approaches. Okay, so the first part of the question is, how critical is it? And my answer is very critical. If you cannot find very good malware families, then it's very hard to generalize from the traffic and basically use these automatic algorithms to extract good detection models. If you put too much stuff together, you will have signatures that are too generic and they will match everything, and you have to throw them away because they will generate false positives, most likely. On the other hand, if your clusters are too small, too specific, you cannot find good generic detection models. And in that case, if your signatures are too specific, you will not be able to match future malware, let's say.
But for this accuracy, you actually have the set of malware you can train for the accuracy.
I'm not sure I understand.
What I mean is that you have the set of malware as training data. So when you derive signatures, you can discard those signatures too generic or too sort of fine-grained based on the training set.
Yes, we actually do that. I didn't have time to talk about it in the paper, but we use a signature pruning process to eliminate the signatures that are likely to generate false positives. What I wanted to point out is the fact that if you don't do the clustering step well at the beginning, you risk to have so many signatures that you need to throw away, and your detection rate will go down. So we actually saw that phenomenon, and that's why we did the three steps clustering approach, right? And that's why the detection rate here is lower than what we get from the signatures that we obtained with our clustering, the three steps clustering refinement process.
Hi, Erij Batayne from University of Texas, San Antonio. Hi. Intriguing work. My first question is, what safety measures did you take when you execute the malware? And the second question is, for a specific malware family, can you give us numbers on number of clusters and number of signatures? For example, Zeus.
I see. Okay. So the first part is what measures? If we run malware, hopefully it will not attack other people, right, while we are running it. So the thing is, here there is a trade-off, right? Because we want the malware to do the real thing in a way. For example, for bots to contact their command and control channel. At the same time, we want to avoid attacks. The main countermeasure we take is to redirect all the SMTP traffic to a spam hole, a spam trap, and we avoid malware to send spam to other people. There are other ways that you can kind of mitigate problems, such as you can put in front of the machine that runs the malware an intrusion prevention system, like you use snorting line, for example, but you reverse it, meaning that you, instead of trying to stop the traffic that comes from outside to your network, you do the opposite, so that you can stop all the known attacks, such as exploits, SQL injection attacks that the malware is trying to perform to other people. So that'll be the answer. For the second part, no. I guess we didn't really focus on particular families of malware. I mean, we saw a lot of, Cinewall or Srisby or Virut and stuff. But I guess we didn't really measure exactly how many of those and where. We were focusing on generic malware. The only requirement was that the malware had to be using HTTP TRIP to communicate with the outside world.
Take the further questions offline because it's time for the break.
Sorry.
thank you one more time.
Thank you.